Hello again, I'm Frieda Morrison, and welcome to Grow Radio. And I start out here in my ain garden, just enjoying the new blossoms and flowers of June. And of course, the chorus of birds. The blackies are still fechting, but I've got new arrivals. The swallows are back, nesting in the shed. And there's a huge hatch of tree spuggies. The sparrows are back, and fit as soon the wee babies mark. They're like wee feathery pom-poms with fluttery wings. And the wagtails are here and ah, and heaps of missile thrushes bumping about our way. Out in the far end of the garden, well, what can I say? If you'd been on our Facebook page, you would have seen one of the beekeepers capturing a swarm through the top of a tree with a long pole and a bucket of the iron. It was dramatic and a wee bit scary. But this is the swarming season. More on that later when I join renowned beekeeper Ian Smith out aside the white rose hedge. That's the rose that smells so sweet and bracks the heart. And I can tell you, it is the best scent ever. A cross between warm rose water and scented almonds. Say bonnie. It's also called the white rose of June. And there's been a huge spurt in the salads in the greenhouse. I'm hearing salads almost every day. In fact, it's even been too hot for them and they're beginning to shoot or go weedy. And the tomatoes are looking good in their beds. They're up now about 4 feet high with three trusses and tiny wee fruits. So far, things are working, but as I said, it's half a dry. Outside here, the rowan trees are hanging with blossom, more than I've ever seen them in the past few years. Then I can't fit that's our boot. Nae doubt somebody will tell me. But I'm outside the wall garden this time. To the main garden, looking at my new barbecue corner I've been working on, strimming the grass and planting some shrubs. This area is sheltered on A side by the big beech trees, sycamore and hawthorn, and on the other side, the long bonny wall of the garden, about 12 feet high, that stretches around 36 feet. That's about 11 metres long, and it's north facing. It's between the alpiggery and the midden, no longer in use both of them, and the walls are works of art. Pink granite stains, and bonny dressed tamper stains round the top. But a care and a skill went into the marking of the dry stain walls around 100 years ago. So I'm keen to make the best of them and enhance them with climbers. But I need to watch. There's aye lime in the joints, and some climbers dig out lime. I'll be shouted at for you, Abdi, if I damage anything. And somebody is going to be shouting at me on a minute. Time to join the gardening gang in our virtual studio. So come with me again, out the gate. And welcome to Grow Radio. And welcome to our virtual gardens again and our very real gardeners. I'll introduce you to the team, the Minty, and they'll be ready to sort out your gardens, whether big or small, pots, windy boxes, or nothing, as I said before. Just enjoy the banter and the fresh air. And we've got bits tea for armchair gardeners, just waiting to log in. We have a new garden to help design. Our friends Joe De Silva and Bruce McGregor up in Inverness have asked us to help design their garden out at Bogbane Farm. And that's coming up later in the programme. So, the team. The head gardener himself, a past curator at the Botanic Gardens in Edinburgh and chair of the Open Garden Scheme. Welcome, Dave Mitchell.
Hello there, Frieda. How are you doing?
I'm there. It kind of reassures me when I hear your voice. It's funny you can't see.
And it's raining and I'm happy and smiling and so's the plants.
And also in Edinburgh, we're soon sorted, an Afakeen gardener, Richie Werner.
Aye. How lovely to be here. Thanks for having us.
It's fine to hear you. And we have gardening questions on email, and we have gardening questions recorded by folk and phones and sent in to us, gathered by your technical wizard, Andrew Davidson. No. A moment of history is about to happen. Dun, dun, we have at last managed to find Andrew. We've lost Nemo, but found Andrew. And just to prove he exists, Andrew, are you there?
I am here, Frieda, if it likes.
Oh, folks, we've found Andrew.
I am a real person.
We've found Andrew, that's the stuff.
Looking for Andrew, we've been finding you. Now, Where are you, Andrew? Where are you speaking for?
I'm up in Aberdeen.
Who's in Aberdeen?
I was just saying to Richie earlier, though, like, I never hear Aberdeen. So for me, it's just fine to hear about other folks.
Aww.
I've got a windy cell full of cacti, but that's about it.
He's a virtual gardener. An armchair gardener.
He's a virtual gardener. And as Andrew Farr collects all the questions, and along with Richie, plugs us into the magical waves and just keeps us out of Langer. So each you get the gist of the new format, we encourage you to record your questions and send them in to Andrew. Now, Andrew, are you ready? Explain the system.
Well, you could do it a number of ways, I think. You can either record a little message on your phone or your computer or your tablet, and I'm sure you've probably got a memo or voice recorder on here. So you can record us a little question, tell us your name for your fae and your question, and then email it to us at info@growradio.com, or you can like Grow Radio or Scots Radio on Facebook, and then go into your little Facebook messenger here, search for Scots Radio or Grow Radio, and then instead of typing a message, Ken at the bottom, there's a little microphone.
Mm-hmm.
Aye. Press that, and you can just send us a message directly.
Oh, that's a bright idea.
Aye, there you go. But any questions, just email us and we'll help you through it.
He does it an awful lot better than me, I tell you. To admit.
You're getting back, Andrew. That's brilliant.
I'm just waiting on questions coming from the other side of the world.
Kenfitt happened. I've got pals across in Atlanta, Georgia, you see, and they were saying, we're listening to your Grow Radio program. We really like it. This is my Atlanta, Georgia accent. We really, really like it.
Oh, it's uncanny, right?
Can we ask some questions? I said, aye. So, didn't I be surprised when George and Judy at Atlanta, Georgia send in some questions?
I used to say, Frieda, when I was working in the botanics, that we're gearing the earth. So, I'm sure we can hear go answering the questions.
I love that phrase. Did you invent that, gearing the earth?
Oh, I can't mind. Maybe in a daft moment.
No, although this is Scots Radio and Grow Radio, you didn't hate to be able to speak Scots. We can cope because we are multi-skilled. We have pooches, four words. I keep saying we're marsupial. And on that note, let's get started. We start with an audio question. First question for Ailsa Smart and Dundee.
My question's about rhubarb. I've got a bit of rhubarb that's been grown in a pot in my garden for the last few years, and it tries every year, does a few leaves, but it's a bit lacklustre, so I was thinking about moving it. Is there a specific time of year I should be doing this, and a position in the garden it would prefer? And also the soil it's going into. I've heard that manure's good, but is there anything easier to come by? Any advice would be great. Thank you.
Oof. Right. Ailsa, lacklustre rhubarb, nothing worse. David?
Well, you can't rhubarb. It's just a big, muckle gross feeder. It loves lots of sunshine, moisture, and nutrients. But it doesn't like to be waterlogged. It's not so keen on heavy clay soils. So, you know, you just have to tuck your time in dealing with it and get the right space for it. It needs about 1.5 square metres to grow. So, as regards Ailsa, it's time for her to get her spade, get out and dig the patch over where it's gone, put plenty of manure or wheel rotted compost in the bottom. And then when you're finished, just give that patch a grun, 2 or 3 weeks just to settle down, and then tramp it in with your heels, rake it, get it nice and level, put the rhubarb out of the pot into the middle with a big can of water just to help it get away. And then keep a bit of eye on it, make sure it doesn't dry out over the summer. And get a good mulch in the autumn. And that's it.
Job done.
No fuss, no bother. You'll hear rhubarb crumble and tart. No hang a fool, you can hear you.
Right. Thanks, Ailsa, for that recording. Moving on to an email question. This is for Fiona Dean and Paul Cosgrove. For their garden down in South West Scotland at Dalton near Lockerbie. It's about strawberries. Paul has sent in a photo, and I've sent a photo to you. Yeah. He's got what he describes as bubbly spittle on his strawbubs. Well, bubbly spittle, David.
I had a look at the pictures, and he's good frog hoppers. They used to be called spittle bugs or cuckoo spit.
Cuckoo spit.
I think the last name came for the fact that it appears about the time of the year when the cuckoo sings. It's most likely the common meadow spittle bug, Phalaenus spumarius. And again, they feed on a lot of plants, but they're off a fonder, chrysanthemums, dahlias, fuchsias. You regularly see it on lavender and rosemary, and on occasionally on the roses and all. You get this wee frothy blob, and inside it there's a wee creamy coloured insect. It doesn't normally affect the plant growth, but if the nymph's been feeding on the very tip shoots, they'll sometimes curl up. You know, you'll no see it after July. It's unsightly. Wash it off with a garden hose or get a dunt with your fingers. Mm-hmm. Then put pesticide on it. And wee queer thing, though, they've been associated with the spread of that plant, new plant disease, Xylella, in Europe. But thankfully, that's no reached Britain yet, and we didn't want it to.
No way.
So it's an example of live and let live. They're just getting these nice wee curious things.
So it's harmless.
Another email question. This is for Sylvia Webster. And the question is about magnolia tree, 5 years old. Hisna fluid, 14 feet tall, very healthy. What's going on, David?
Magnolias is an interesting question. It's difficult and easy to answer. It also has the potential to teach us the value of patience and time. Because she hasn't said what kind of magnolia it is. And some of the larger species, like Magnolia campbellii, can take anything from 15 to 20 years to flower if they've been produced from seed. Whereas some of the smaller ones, like Magnolia stellata, which is more like a large shrub, it'll flower at a young age. So, you know, the problem could be to do with how the plant was produced, or it might be to do with aspect or soil. But I think, really, she just has to be patient. And, yeah, she might try giving it a wee dressing of sulfate of potash, about 50 grams per square metre forked in the early spring. That might encourage it to flower. You know, if you're buying magnolias, especially the large flower ones, it's always worth buying grafted plants and paying that bit extra money for them. And that way they'll flower younger and you'll hopefully have the benefit of them longer throughout your own lifetime.
Okay. Thanks, Sylvia. Richie.
Hi.
We need an update about your garden. Fitz blooming, Fitz the bairns dear.
Well, do you know, it's so funny. I've not had a chance to really get in there and prune back, but I've seen some bonny wee blooms the other day, and they didn't last long, but the wee blue iris was up. But it's getting absolutely covered with a hedge that I forgot kind of all about, and I forgot my irises were there, and there's four wee flowers going, hello, we're still here, we're still alive, help me. So I'll need to get in there and sort that out, you know. I'll tell you what else has come out is all my roses have bloomed. There's some fantastic scents and some fantastic smells. I've been enjoying showing the girls that and pretending to be Beauty and the Beast with the rose and all that. But a beautiful tea rose has come out. I've got a Queen Elizabeth that's a big high climber. It's out up next to the girls' treehouse, so that's fabby. And the other thing is I've got an abundance of woodland geranium. So I have seen a lot of wee wiggly bumblebee buttons, both orange
baby bumbles
and yelly. Oh, they're mad for it. So that wee woodland geranium up and down one of my beds, and they're just going daft.
I would imagine you've got the paddling pools out and you're having a fine time with your family again, relaxing with the shrubs.
I've been reusing the water after the sun's down as well. I've been taking the water out of the paddling pools and watering the garden. It's been so dry.
That's a really good thing to do, right? Actually, you know, recycle. Water's a very precious resource.
Oh, very much so.
Never forget that.
So, and it's been an abundance in the paddling pool. It'd be a shame just to kelp it onto the grass, like, you know. So it's been getting into the flowers. And the honeysuckle's out. Just opened this morning. Beautiful.
Honeysuckle's out in Kirstorfin. And I've got a couple of shrub roses out, one called Ancient Mariner. It has a lovely scent. And another in kind of apricot-coloured shrub rose called Beautiful Hermione.
Oh.
Kind of a bonny thing. It kind of smells of cinnamon. Oh, and I can
practically smell
thing.
It for here. That's amazing.
As I said earlier on, the Rosa spinosissima pimpinella foliage is out again this year. And it's better than last year. I've got a hell hedge of the roses. Oh. And the smell, the scent of that wee rose, the wee Scotch rose, it's so beautiful. Right, we better move on.
Aye.
Another email question. This is for Susan Lovey from Edinburgh about bees. She's a small garden, but would like to attract more bees. Can we give her some ideas to replant for bees more than just for the summer?
Well, there's loads of things that bees love. There's a great list of plants, you know, starting with buddleias, but I often think it's early in the season that's important. In that period, March to May, when things like borage, Erica carnea, Pulmonaria and Pyrus are in flower, because that gives the bees food early in the year. in the middle of the summer, the borage will carry on, but you can't beat, you've got to see it, you can't beat it. Lavender, Nepeta and salvias. Bees are just in bee heaven if you've got a lot of that in the garden. And then, it's a queer thing, but November to April, bees are can be about and they're looking for things. So birch, hazel, mahonia, hellebores, crocus, muscari, snowdrops, they're all valuable to bees, particularly when they're waking up after winter and they're going out foraging, you know, the early queen bumblebees. And don't forget native plants. We're all that busy with on blooming strimmers, cutting things down, but dandelions, colt's foot, willow herb, teasel, they're all important food sources for bees. And, and don't forget the butterflies. For goodness sake, leave some nettles for the peacock butterflies to lay their eggs on, because that's the only plant that they do actually
like. Oh, interesting.
Speaking about the pollen, just know that the cars are covered in yellow dust. It's quite an interesting time of the year just to see this happening. It just seems to kind of come from nowhere, and you're covered with that. So it's not a good if you suffer for hay fever, meaning, you know, but you just realise how important pollen is.
You often see that even in the city with the pollen off the trees.
Oh,
sycamore,
aye.
You walk along the street and the car's just covered in a yellow film.
So as soon as June starts, my hay fever kicks off, so I ken it's on the air, like, you know.
it's there.
Oh, aye.
No, on that subject of bees, we're in the season of the blinky days. That's sun sometimes, then cloud. And that's ideal for the swarming season. The beekeepers are running it all over the place, trying to catch the swarms back into their hives. Now, Ian Smith, their boy, is a renowned beekeeper, past pipe major of the Ballater Pipe Band as well. I'll tell you this about the piping, because Ian told me, near that long ago, that his bees were piping. So I envisaged a bee pipe band walking up and down, but no, all will be revealed. And I can tell you that we will hear a piping bee later in the programme in a wee minute. But first, as I sit outside with Ian, beside the hedge of the White Rose of June, the Pimpinella, the White Rose of Scotland, as I mentioned earlier, covered with honeybees, Ian explains the swarming season. We'll come to the piping as well.
Well, the swarming season is when the all queen comes out to find herself a new house.
A new house. So she packs her suitcase and does her ironing,
yes,
makes her sandwiches and says, right, I'm off, boys.
She leaves a young queen to take charge of the hive.
Aye. And then the worker bees follow her, some of the worker bees follow her.
50%, or roughly half.
Aye.
Roughly half will follow her to wherever they meet up, in a bush or a tree or something, usually not far from the hive for a start.
Hopefully not doing a lum.
Hopefully not doing a lum, because they're quite awkward at the good of the air.
I can well imagine.
Oh, I do.
So they choose a place and they can settle there for a while until they decide whether they're going to bide there.
Aye.
Or move on.
That's right.
And do they put out scouts?
They put out scout bees to find a permanent home. Actually, the scout bees can boot before a swarm comes off. Okay?
Oh.
The scout bees can be out looking for a place because they came farther gone. McNest.
They didn't just leave a hive and go somewhere.
No.
There's a definite plan.
There's a definite plan of what they're going to do.
They've kent
that. Aye. Yes.
So the swarm, there could be hundreds of bees and there could be thousands of bees.
There would be thousands of bees.
Thousands of bees. And the queen's in that bar, if you like, of
bees. Aye, it is.
Are they dangerous? I mean, folk are fierce when they see a great big bar of bees.
Well, I can't say they want to sting, but they're very unlikely to sting.
Uh-huh.
When they're in the swarming mood, you'll put your horn into a swarm and when I touch it.
I've seen you doing that.
Aye.
I just would have had a heart attack when I saw you doing that. Yeah.
Aye.
But I've also seen you capturing the swarm, because you can't just let a swarm disappear because they're valuable. You can. You capture it with a skep. You can.
Aye.
That's a straw basket. And you put the skep under the bees.
Yes.
And then for DVD.
You just give the branch or whatever it is that they're hanging on.
Aye.
A quick knock.
A dunt.
And a dunt, and they'll fall down into the scape, and then you just take a scape and turn it upside down and put it on the ground and leave it like that. and leave a port so some of the flying bees can get in. And all the bees will go in there.
It's amazing to watch. I've seen it. And I've also seen you taking your skep up to the hive, Father Camudo, or an empty hive. And I've watched them, for you say, walking into the hive. It's amazing to watch.
Aye, that's the best way to put the men is walk up, just walk up and do a bit of sticker or anything. And they'll go right inside. And once you get the queen in, the rest will follow. Just will buy in a minute when she's in.
So you didn't put them back into the same hive, though, did you?
No.
Because she's left
that
hive.
You can't do, but it's unlikely to put them back into the same hive. We've made a new hive.
The owl hive is now beginning to make sure that they've got a new queen.
They have a new queen, aren't
they? Hatcher. I've learned through the years of watching you be a beekeeper, but I'm kind of getting the gist of Fitz gone far and fine. Right, blinky days. Now,
blinky days.
Aye, fit a day.
Well, that's when you get all your swarms. Blinky days. If you've a hot day and the sun's coming and going, cloud cover and all the rest of it, that's when you'll get a swarm.
Right. One last question. I've told folk that when a queen is ready to come out and find a new house, she pipes. There's a piping noise. Now, I've heard it.
You're absolutely right. You'll hear the next hour, you'll hear her peeping.
Just with a beep.
Yes.
Beep. And folk think, no, Frieda's just, she's lost the plot here. Bees do not pipe. But they div.
Aye.
Bees pipe.
Yes, they div. And you'll get a swarm next day, you're sure.
And the swarm goes. So you're waiting for them. These are the signs that they're ready to swarm. And you're ready with your skep. You're ready to run. You're ready to run. It's just from the beekeeper. Oh, why? Just scatter. You know, it's like the Ghostbusters getting mad. You're on your bee suits running about trying to find the farther bee.
Abdi gets excited just like a time of milk cow cubs.
Oh, it is an education, though. And if we didn't look after the bees, we've had it, basically. I'll finish off by saying, if somebody comes across a swarm, or they have a swarm attached to a tree, or heaven help us, to a lum or anywhere, don't panic. Just phone the beekeepers, get in touch with the beekeepers, and they'll come out and sort it.
That's it.
And capture the bees, whether it's up trees or away. Ian, thank you for that. Cup of tea time.
Perfect. Thank you.
Watch the swallows. And we did, swallows or nester. Ian Smith and the Swarm and Bees. Now, folky folks, I will let you hear the piping bee. At the end of this programme, have patience, and the legendary piping bee will be heard. Andrew, have you heard the piping bee?
I've never heard a piping bee, no.
You think I'm hearing you on? No, they hearing you on. You can just
I'll wait and see at the end,
There's a question mark in his voice, I can hear that. Richie's heard it, Dave's heard it. Right, onward, back to the job in hand. Garden and questions. Question email, Faye. Paul Cosgrove again about his cucumbers this time. Now, let me just see if I have the cucumber. And he says, as you can see from my photo, the cucumber plant is only about a foot high. It's got three flowers on it already. Do I let it mature or should I snip them off?
Well, it's easy. Just before we get direct to that, just mind me your cucumbers. Feed them well, then let them dry out. And let them run free and tie them in as you go. It's the side shoots that you remove. With a sharp knife near your fingers, leave the flowers alone. Even that low down, they might produce your first fruits.
Okay, Paul, there's an instruction.
Mm.
Audio question again. This is for Angela Leslie about climbers.
My question is, what climber would you recommend for a south-facing wall? I'd ideally like it to be fast-growing, and definitely an evergreen. Thank you.
Right, Dave. What can we suggest?
Well, this was an interesting question. It was a bit of a challenge, you know, because most folk with a south-facing wall would be wanting to cover it in things that weren't evergreen and that would flare their wee hearts out. And, you know, evergreens in general, some of them will tolerate direct sun, but they're not that. You know, they're not overly keen on it. You know, some of the big-leaved ivies like Hedra colchica dentata or the variegated Indentata variegata, or there was another one called Paddy's Pride. They changed the name of it to Sulphur Heart. They'll grow in the full sun, all of them, but they're better in a shady nook, and I'm kind of scratching my head, and then I mind it, Well, the common ivy, Hedra helix, there's varieties of it. There's a big yellow one called Buttercup, and there's a kind of silvery green one called Glacier. And they'll tolerate the sunshine. And the Irish ivy, Hedra helix hibernica, it's just a big green growing thing. It's vigorous and it'll dance all over most was very rapidly. But I started thinking there must be something better as them. No, there's nothing wrong with them, like. And I thought, well, maybe jasmine's Jasminum polyanthemum or Jasminum officinale, both with big white scented flowers. Beautiful. Or the more exotic Trochlospermum asiaticum or Trochlospermum jasminoides, they're off a bonny plants. And, or a big wall shrub like Magnolia grandiflora. So it has great big creamy white goblet-like flowers. So there's lots of things to choose for, but I think she might be better with a combination. And be brave, put a wee bit of colour in it in the summer and all, you know. And just mind, ivies, if you do go down that route, they've got adventitious roots and they hang on to the wall. And you were talking earlier, Frieda, about watching you didn't damage walls. But I'm not going to say much about that because again, we're going to do a bit on gardening on walls in the next programme that will look at sun lovers and shady characters and shelter seekers and wee gems and how to plant them and how to hoard them onto the wall. Because planting climbers are a complicated business, but it's enough of rewarding you and you get a long-lasting friend if you go about it the right road.
Right now, again, we're going to be majoring on climbers next episode. But very, very briefly, I'm going to bring Richie in here. Aye. Because for this, I mentioned the fact that I'm feared about the climbers on the north-facing ward. It's a wall garden, so I didn't want to damage one. But I'm feared of them kind of hulking out the lime. And Richie, you've got experience of that, haven't you?
That happened to me a couple of years ago, yes. So my dividing wall between the neighbour, it's ancient, it's about 200-year-old. And it kind of got a bit overgrown. I had forsythia, I had pyracantha, and there was ivy going up there. And what actually happened was the ivy had gotten into the mortar joints, and amazingly the forsythia had gotten there as well, to the point where I was starting to get holes through the wall. I could see the kneebar and it was getting a bit dangerous, so got on about starting to take it out, and I cut the forsythia back, went and took out the big trunky forsythia, and was it no rotten to the core? It had been rotten for years and it basically was growing out the wall, so it all had to come out and I had to repaint the whole thing. But fit a job, and the ivy had really got in. But this was a really old mortar, a really old sort of Georgian mortar, and it hadn't been done since then. So I've got a mere modern sort of mix in there now that I think's going to keep it out. But you got to check the condition of your wall first, I think, before you let something that's going to suckle onto it, you know.
Okay. Listen, I'm just going to bring Andrew in there. Andrew, you still there?
No, I'm still here.
Aye. If I ken your mum and dad are keen gardeners.
My dad gives it a go, maybe. Or maybe
not. Is it wrong to say you've been listening to the programme and you've been tucking in the questions and all the rest of it for us? This is the third episode. Is there only a chance of you tucking up gardening, do you think, when you've got a chance?
I'd love to. I've only ever actually grown one plant in my whole life. And that was when I was a bairn. For seed, I grew a tomato plant in the garden up in the Broch. And it grew, but there was no tomatoes on it. And then one morning, my mum was like, you should go and have a look outside. And when I went out, there was perfect, ripe cherry tomatoes over the bush.
I thought
it was delicious. And then years and years went past. And then later on, my mum and dad were speaking about times folk have done stuff to kind of like fool their kids and that. And it turns out my dad had gone on overnight and sewn them on, like stitched them onto the plant. But like the thing is, at the time, I think I was probably old enough to see the stitching, so I'm not sure how that worked.
Oh, Andrew, you're a gem. I love that story. I love it. Right, you're listening to Grow Radio. This is Frieda Morrison, and with me is Heid Gairdner, David Mitchell, and our show's author, Richard Werner, and our new production sorter and budding Gairdner, Andrew Davis. Well done, Andrew. Dave, I mentioned earlier that we would be talking on a new project in the programme. Never have we attempted to design a garden for a distance. But Van Joe De Silva and Bruce McGregor got in touch, needing some advice about a spanser gers next to the car park at their events venue at Bogbane Fair outside Inverness. We couldn't nae help. We thought, fit why nae? That phrase again, fit why nae? As well as Bogbean, Joan Bruce run McGregor's Bar in Inverness, and Bruce is the renowned fiddle player and leader of the band Blazing Fiddles. So they sent us some photos, and Dave was on the phone with a heaps of plant suggestions, and more than that, a unique planting theme. So I'll let Joe and Bruce describe the site.
We have this area of, I suppose it's hard standing, isn't it? It's
Yeah, originally, when the farm was taken over by my father, he took the main, around the buildings, he did a lot of work making hard standing, because at that stage he was expecting lots of lorries in for collection of deliveries and things. So there is a large area of hard standing, which has been handy for our car park. And then at one stage, we used a bit of it for a kids' play centre for years. So there was a bit where there was tarmac, which has all been ripped up now. But all of that area is fairly compacted and has never really grown much in that the time that I've known.
So we're focusing, just to clarify, focusing in that patch of grass that you sent the photographs of, and we can focus in on how we're going to suggest you cope with the work and the planting on that. Dave, over to you.
Well, I think there's a few challenges here, Frieda. And to me, the biggest one is the fact that you've got this wonderful set of sort of farm buildings in that open countryside with great skyscapes. And, you know, the place will have a sense, what we call a sense of place of its own. And what you don't want to do is to impose something onto that that looks strange, that looks alien. You want, whatever you do, you want it to be in harmony with the surrounding buildings. You want it to provide a bit of shelter. And that shelter can come in various ways, and we can speak about that in a moment or two. You also have to decide what you want the actual space that you're going to create to achieve. Is it just something to look at, or has it got to have a function beyond that? And I think there's an opportunity here, you know, for something that isn't just nice to look at, but has a practical purpose and actually can add a new dimension to what is actually going on the site.
Okay, back to Joe and Bruce. What do you want it to do?
Well, I mean, predominantly because we do a number of events, it has to look beautiful. We want people to come up there, and as Dave said, it has to have a sense of place. The views are absolutely stunning. We've down towards the Moray Firth, and then up to Ben Wyvis. So from that patch of ground, you look out onto this amazing view. But you're right, you know, it's making it more than just something that's very, very beautiful. And the fact that, you know, Bruce is so entrenched in traditional music and the music of Scotland, you know, would lend itself really, really well to make it more than just something that's beautiful.
Okay. Now, given that you've got the wherewithal to sort out the soil and the compaction, can we move on to Dave's thoughts on the theme? Dave, back to you again.
Well, you know, when I heard about this idea, there was a wee sort of thought come into my head about a fiddler's garden. And I thought, what would be in a fiddler's garden? And then I thought, fits a fiddle made out of? And I looked into that in a bit of detail, and, you know, there's at least five or six, maybe eight different types of timber used in the manufacture of a fiddle or a violin or other instruments of that ilk. And a lot of them have uses as shelter, things like sycamore, Norway maple. Not so much the beech, and there isn't room on the site for that, but things like European spruce and even Sitka spruce, poplar, willow, small-leaved lime, all those timbers are used in the manufacture of a fiddle. And that made me think maybe you could have a screen of trees to the back, but then it would be quite nice to create maybe a seating area in front of that that was in the shape of a fiddle head, you know. And I have a word for this. I call it a fank. You make a fank for sheep in the borders where they can shelter out of the wind. And I thought, imagine a dry stone wall and a bit of a spiral representing the fiddle head, but with a seat in it, and maybe even a bit of a performance space, so that if folk were coming to a wedding, the bridal party quite often like to get some nice photos just away and get a minute or two to themselves. You know, you could come into that bit of the garden at the front and have their picture taken and get a bit of peace, or you could have a small performance space. And that area itself would then be planted with things that reflected Scottish music. And, you know, there's a wonderful poem by Robert Burns called The Posy, and it transferred into a song. It's quite well known, and it has five or six different plants that are in it. And then I started to look deeper into that idea, and I came up with quite a big list of plants that are mentioned in Scottish
songs. And you've sent a list to Bruce and Joe already, a very comprehensive list.
I sent them a draft list just to hear, look at and kind of see where this idea might or might not evolve.
Mention some of the plants you've sent through. Joe, Bruce, you've seen Dave's list. I mean, it's a well-worked, a beautifully researched piece of work that you've got there. Is there anything in there that catches your eye with the song connection?
I mean, to be honest, Frieda, see, our ability to know about plants and gardening, we're total and utter amateurs. So
don't you worry, we are here to help you. And so
I wouldn't even put us in the amateur category, to be quite honest. Okay. If there's a level below that, I think we're just under that level.
That's about right. But I think for us, the main thing is that it will look beautiful and pretty. And because we have weddings up there, probably from March all the way through till October, and then some weddings right through the winter, it's about making the space have some sort of texture and colour there that will carry us through the year. Because at the moment, it's very bare. I mean, it's very, very bare. And we just keep looking at it thinking, there's so much that we could do if we just had someone who could kind of help us along the way. So, I mean, we're quite...
find your helpers.
Oh, yeah, and I think actually one of the things that we haven't mentioned really is the colour. The only bits of colour we have got around the place a lot of the time is the old farm machinery that is kicking about and can be utilised as well.
Okay, right. Listen, I'm going to go back to Dave because we're just about nearing the end of this session. This is our first visit to your garden. But what I would like to hear is some of the suggestions that Dave made for plants because they're connected to songs, etc. Dave, over to you with your suggestions.
We talked about trees and things for shelter, and that shelter is very important. And it's the same with the other plants. I mean, that bitty will be kind of windswept at times. There'll be a bit of a blast coming across it. So you don't want you want things that are, you know, low growing, able to resist the wind, or sheltered by that dry stone wall that I was talking about, and especially if it was done in a curve with a border in front of it. But that bit'll come. But things like Erica Carnea, the winter heath, that would give you colour in the spring and summer, the late spring and early summer. Erica Cineria, the bell heather, you know, a wonderful colour again in late spring, early summer. Erica tetralix, you know, various forms of that, summer and autumn. And, you know, your year starting off with things like snowdrops and bluebells, and, you know, there's no reason why you couldn't use honeysuckle as well, and, you know, things like cowslips and primrose and dog roses. I mean, even things like the burnet rose will make a very good hedge. Rosa pimpinella, Pimpinella folia, makes a great hedge. But, you know, things like mountain thyme growing on the ground, and then, you know, give you colour in the summer, or foxgloves, again, great for summer colour. Various forms of broom would be ideal. And then, you know, we shouldn't forget the wildflowers and the link to the sort of grassland and the road verges and things round about. What you want to try and do is to merge it in so that it's there, it creates interest, but it's also quite sort of subtle, and it's near in your face.
That's exactly what we envisaged. Is, you know, I'm listening to those plants, and as we said, we're not by any stretch of the imagination experts, but when I hear those names of the plants and I can envisage them, and then at the same time the songs are going through my head of, you know, as you're talking about them, and I'm thinking, oh, it's just such a great idea and way to bring everything together.
Can I just come in there when you mentioned the Rosa spinosissima pimpinella folia, David? That's the burnet rose, or the Scotch rose that Hugh McDermid referred to, Joe and Bruce. And I was talking to Freeland Barber just the other day about the Lady Nairn and her song. And she wrote a song, actually, called The White Rose of June. And that's the white rose that David just mentioned just now.
The other thing, you know, talking about Lady Carolina Nairn, this garden's got to have rowan trees in it. You know, you get Absolutely. The blossom off that, you get the berry. You know, we're going about bringing all these fancy things from all over the world, but when you look at our own native flora and what we can grow and what that does for insects and bees and butterflies, and you know, it's something to be celebrated in a quiet way. But I think there's also aspects of this where, you know, maybe the use of a piece of sculpture or nice slate stone carving set into the wall. You know, there's a lot of creativity around this that could create something that added an extra dimension to what you do, because it was multi-purpose, it was interesting, it was colourful, it was emblematic of your business and emblematic of the site and Scottish culture and, you know, your connection with, your strong connection with music. I mean, I was just looking at the list of plants and I was off a chuffed when I got through the list, and I kept thinking, oh, there must be something that's got a connection. And there it was, Erica Sineria, Fiddler's Gold. And I just thought, ah, that's it, I've cracked it. And it's this big, broad, golden heather with beautiful pink flowers on it. You know, and I could imagine that planted with foxgloves in among it and snowdrops around the edges and, you know, maybe a birch tree kicking above it and getting a bit of shade. And, ah, it was just all coming into my head and I thought, ah, this'll work.
That's fantastic.
Okay, let's, the next stage now, and we're going to finish this off here. Otherwise, we'll be here all day. But to finish off here, what we're needing you today is just write out a wee plan or draw out a wee plan for how you think things would go. Now, don't worry about it, because we'll have to start somewhere, and send us through a wee, just a wee sketch or plan. And we'll come back to you. So this is our first visit to your garden, okay? So the second visit we'll arrange later on. And the best wishes, we're here with you. So don't worry about
Thank you. Just get stuck in.
Can I make a wee suggestion when you're doing your plan? Mm-hmm. Can you make a few notes on it about where the best views are and where the wind comes from?
Yes, we'll do that, no problem.
So that we can think about shelter.
Yep.
If I go to Cainfair, the wind comes for you. That's my experience of life. Right.
Thank you
Finishing
so much.
There. Bruce, Joe, we'll see you soon.
Thanks very much. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
Joe De Silva and Bruce McGregor. And we'll be back and forth, keeping an eye on developments. Looking forward to your next visit. Good on you, Joe, and good on you, Bruce. It was an enjoyable visit, wasn't it, Dave?
Oh, it was a grand exercise. And I like things like that that make you look at plants in a different way and force you to develop a strong narrative, because a garden's not just about being a bonny thing to look at. It should be like a living book, a living calendar. It should sink to your heart day to day, week to week, lifetime to lifetime.
I was just thinking, Dave, that's just such an amazing and thoughtful and personal way to think of Bruce and his garden. So it really makes it quite a personal thing. And it's got him. I think that all the woods that a fiddle's made for you and approaching the garden from that angle, I thought, you're just so clever, man. I'd take my hat off to you, you know. I love it.
No. I mentioned Freeland Barber there in that session with Joe and Bruce. Hi. And just to mention that over on Scots Radio, or Mothership, on Scots Radio, www.scotsradio.com, I'm speaking to Freeland about The White Rose O'Gask. That's his new book about the life and songs of Lady Nairn. And it's a cracking book. So just nip across to the other side and listen to Scots Radio, www.scotsradio.com. And that's a recent episode. Freeland Barber and the White Rose O'Gask. Richtyhoo, back to other gardens. And we've got time for a couple of quick fires. Holy Tatties. David, Holy Tatties. Gordon Hay, alongside near Peter Heed, has holes in his tatties. Fitzcars and that.
Holy Tatties. Well, they've nae had the blessing because they've had keel slugs at them or wireworms. And it's difficult. As regards to slugs, there are varieties like Iron Pilot, Pentland Dell and King Edward that are supposedly a wee bit resistant to slug damage. Wireworms, actually, the larvae are click beetles, and it's more of a challenge to control. But there is a nematode that you can get that you apply in water when the soil's 12 to 20 degrees in temperature, usually between April and September, and that does help to control it a little bit. And if you go to the Green Gardener website, there's plenty of information there about how to source it, buy it and use it. And it's pretty good stuff. It's connected to Nemesis. Folk will have heard of that.
Aye. No, you mentioned King Edward. The kind of memory banks again. I'm just thinking that was a tatty was bred in Banshire, so that might be a good end to try, Gordon, for there. Maybe it was bred for that purpose, in fact.
Well, I think a lot of these varieties, when they were working on them, they were looking for resistance to, you know, problems like that. And these things are incredibly valuable now, the genetics of them, because, you know, obviously the pesticide armory, insecticide armory, disease armory, of all of these chemicals that we used to use is more and more and more limited, and rightly so. So we need genetics to help us to make plants resistant to attack.
Right, last in, quick fire. Catherine Bruin, fan, can you reshape a prunus?
Well, you're better to wait to the autumn and winter. A couple of tips, you know, take some pictures of the tree now in your mobile for different angles, so that when you come to look at it in the winter, you can look at your phone and mind what it looked like, because you'll have forgotten when it was covered in leaves. And mind when you're pruning, cut off short lengths. You can cut more off, but you can't put it back on. And when you're pruning, always step back for something regularly and look at it for different angles. Remove the dead growth and crossing branches and unruly growth. And mind that when you're finished, it shouldn't look as though you've been there at all. Mm-hmm. Pruning's an art. It's great therapy. If you do it with care and you don't rush it, look at going pruning as a dance with nature, no an attack on it.
Okay. Nay like fit. I will not mention a name that somebody that helps me in the garden called Jordy. Well, I did mention a name. A chainsaw is nay a good idea for pruning.
Oh, dear.
Nay.
I was too late.
The other thing I didn't like is the boys that leave coat hangers. And wee bitties about 6 inches long, crows to the trunk. Oh, the ones I know for scunner. Cut it off nice and flush and clean and tidy.
Right, can I invite you to get in contact with us? Either via email, iPhone, we are getting questions. We'd like to hear from you. Andrew, anything to add there?
No, just like I said, if any more help are at your needing, just go to growradio.com and get in touch and we can help you.
Aye. Name it or even just started. We've all been there and I hope you've enjoyed our Danner doing the garden again. Now, dinner put off, get in touch. Here's the email address again to send your emails and your phone recording. And we'll just watch the name is a note on thing. I'm just doing very brief this time. info@growradio.com. info@growradio.com. And as it is befitting, we have this track for the Blazing Fiddle CD, The Key. And earlier, mind, we were speaking to Bruce McGregor for Blazers designing the garden. And this will play us out to the programme, an appropriate track called Bee's Wings. Bee's Wings. And it's time to let you hear the piping bee. Richie, are you ready?
Aye, I'm ready.
So, bye new for the team, on behalf of the team, David Mitchell, Andrew Davidson, Richie Werner and myself. Enjoy your gardening. Bring on the piping bee!